Hello again from your story catcher. A family friend of ours has a saying, life is lumpy. Well, if that's true, and I think it is, I've had a mountain of lumpies to dodge in the past few months, and they all congealed and conspired to ensure that this week's potpourri features, well, me and a couple of my stories. Here's what's happened. The first trip was to the Lowveld, as you know, but I limped back from Hoedspruit with nothing in my story catcher satchel and everything ominous in Alexandra's engine. More ominosity await. Isn't that a fabulous word? Ominosity. Why don't we hear it more often? More ominosity awaited at home because criminals had robbed me of all but a few things that I hold especially dear. But the potpourri deadline was upon us. So, while Iveco plunged into Alexandra's innards, I rushed back to Hoedspruit by airport transfer. That was the ride of my life, and it confirmed that for minibus taxis in South Africa, speed limit signs are but a hint. I got the stories, and back I came by the same death-defying means, and Amy Moss and I scrambled to post the stories on time. Phew! I drew breath and headed next for Grahamstown for stories from that history and eccentricity-rich part of the country, only to have Alexandra's electrical troubles decide otherwise. Before I'd even left Gauteng, she was flashing engine failure at me again. And that's a flash you do not ignore. I had a grinchy Christmas on the farm with no dinner and no stocking, but plenty of bubbles that were meant for Amy's parents, the Mosses of Mosslands outside Grahamstown, who, I trust, kept my seat at the table unoccupied and shrouded in black. Oh, and I was burgled again by the same guys, but there was little left for them to take but tins of baked beans and frozen loaves of bread. May they have grinchy Christmases for the rest of their lives. It was only baked beans and government bread on the table. So now I was in a severe potpourri pickle. This Wednesday, was looming, and once again I had nothing in my story catcher satchel. But never fear, the Magaliesberg is here, and it's full of fascinating folk. So I rushed around and bagged a couple of biggies. Sipho Hotsticks Mabuza, for instance. He lives down the road, can you believe it? And Reinhard Erasmus, he's a horse whisperer who will blow your pip. But you're not hearing them today because Eskom has decided otherwise and put huge lumpies in the way of completing the edit in time. So this month I bring you two stories from the Southern Kalahari. I'm off there next, and it's something of an old stamping ground for me. I was coming and going from there for five or six years, taking Kamani San elders and their children back into the Karhari Transfrontier Park, which was once their home. They were evicted from it in waves of expulsions starting in the 1930s, and the old folk wanted their descendants to visit the memorable places of their youth and have them documented. Those elders are all dead now, but at least the kids have recordings of their stories, and we do too. They say that the Kalahari takes a great deal from you before it gives anything back. I still feel that it owes me for what it took over those years, physically, emotionally, financially. But there were two gifts it presented to me which perhaps made up for all the hardships. My dogs, Blitzy and Tina. And now Blitz is gone. He lost his battle against liver cancer during this most unfestive season, and I had to put him down on the 27th of December. He was a dog of dogs, truly, and we'll make a video tribute to him when I get back from the Kalahari. We'll put it up on YouTube. I found Blitzy dying on a dune in one of the Kamani settlements. I scooped him up and brought him back to life, a life that lasted 13 years, a lot of it spent as a fellow pilgrim on the road, half awake and half asleep by turn on the passenger seat. He paid attention when it was necessary and dozed when not. Lots to learn there. He was a serious chap and inquisitive and wise. Can a dog be wise? I believe so. And he gave me the kind of love that human beings are incapable of because it is so forgiving and absolute. He seemed to arrive and thrive, fade and go, and so quickly, the thread of his life so much shorter than mine. I adored him. I have scattered some of his ashes under the spreading thorn tree that I see from my bed when the light first touches the mountains behind it and when it leaves at nightfall. The rest of his grey dust I have put in a little silver bottle, which will stay on my dressing table, and some will go onto the Kalahari's hot sands, not where I found him, that was such a cruel and indifferent place for him, but at the little cottage where my dear friend Sue Oxborough and I kept him alive just before rushing him to the vet in Uppington. Those sands will again be blisteringly hot during my visit to the Red Dunes later this week. Somehow 38, 39 degrees is a fitting temperature for a semi-desert, isn't it? Many have believed that fortunes lie beneath that hot sand, and now I bring you a story of one of them. The old Kumani Bushman, and the family I worked with want to be known as Bushman, not San, that I took into the Kalahari Transfrontier Park, showed an extraordinary memory for places where the standout events of their lives had taken place. Bux Craper was one of them. During our trip, he told us about an event that took place in 1958, when Bux was a teenager. News had come in that a car had been found deserted in a remote part of the park. So the manager of the park, young Bux, and some of the older bushmen set off to find it. Now, in 2011, we were standing at the place where the car had been over 50 years before. I asked Bux if he was sure that the car had been precisely there. I remember his response. "We bushmen have GPS in our heads," he said, "and our memories are good because we can't write. The car was right here, I know for sure." When they first found the car, there was a note in it from its owner saying, "No water for the car, no water for myself, no food, following this road, H. Schwaber." But the car's radiator still contained water. The rescue team smelled a rat. They set off on Schwaber's tracks, which were at first strong and confident. Then there were signs that he was stopping often to dig small holes in the sand. Eventually, the German's footsteps became erratic and halting. He was dragging his feet and sitting down often. After some 40 kilometres, the trackers made a grisly discovery at the foot of a small camel thorn. Around the tree was the spoor of a pack of hyenas and signs of a struggle. Schwaber's body was mutilated, and his left forearm, with a gold watch on it, had been taken by the scavengers. The bushman stayed with Schwaber's remains for the night, beating off hyenas that were attracted to the bloody scene, and the next morning they buried what was left of Schwaber. They made a cross of camel thorn branches and placed his prospector's hammer, his little tin of Mari biscuits, a few cigarettes, and his pillbox on the grave. It would be over half a century before Schwaber's family came to visit his burial site. As the local saying goes, that's why deserts are so addictive. They're black and white. If you do good, you'll survive. If you make mistakes, you'll die. You can find Schwaber's story and many others in my book, What David Knew. And if you'd like a copy of it, please write to me, patricia@storycatcher.co.za. It costs 350 rand, including postage, within South Africa. And of course, I'll sign it for you. Schwaber was one of many dreamers who have been attracted to the Kalahari throughout history in the belief that their fortunes lay beneath its sands. He was looking for diamonds, hence the evidence of prospecting that the trackers found along his route. Others have searched for the legendary lost city of the Kalahari, the towering, turreted settlement that had allegedly been discovered in this area in the late 1800s by the explorer William Hunt, better known as Farini, but never seen again. There have been at least 30 expeditions mounted to find the lost city, many of them written up, but locals believe it was a hill of huge calcrete rocks that the adventurers saw, and from afar it looked like a palace. The hill is on a farm called Kopies Kraal, and I'll try and get there during my visit because the farmer is doing very interesting things there with camels. You'll be surprised what. So that's our somewhat different potpourri for the month of January. If you've enjoyed hearing a story from my adventures, please let me know and perhaps we'll include them as a regular feature. I am so looking forward to being in the Kalahari again. I have some very dear friends who live there and who are a marvelous conduit, by the way, to unusual stories. But there's another very important reason why Tina and I are going there. Both of us are profoundly depressed after Blitzy's death. But I have never seen a dog so glum in grief as Tina is now. Never. I think there are two ways to help her. Hit the road and get her a little companion. Let me just say that it's not my habit to go out and find dogs. They have all found me on my travels, and they seem to time their arrivals in my life with great precision. I would never, ever buy a dog from a breeder because there are so many needing homes in southern Africa. Plus, Blitz has only been dead 3 weeks, so this does seem like indecent haste. But let's see who's out there. With the help of my friend Nanette Fleming, who knows every corner of every bushman settlement in that part of the Kalahari, never mind how remote, Tina and I have a good chance of finding the right dog. I'm looking for a desert adaptation of the Africanus, or Aboriginal dog. I find them very easy to be with. All Africanuses are, I know. They're not overly aggressive or neurotic or noisy, but these Kalahari dogs seem to have even greater intuition and bush instincts. They're great with snakes, and we have plenty here in the Magaliesberg. And they're very sociable, which is important if you're on the road meeting other people's hounds. Plus, of course, they're the right size to fit two up on Alexandra's passenger seat. Fingers crossed, but I'm not going to rush our decision. And that's it for this month. If you're enjoying our Storycatcher podcasts, please like and follow us.